Thank you. This is a public meeting of the mayor and council of the township of Clinton, county of Hunterdon, state of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the bulletin boards in the municipal building and faxed to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger. Could I have a roll call, please?
Sure. Councilwoman Switlet?
Here.
Councilman Kuchinowski?
Here.
Councilman Malay?
Here.
Council President McTiernan, who is away, and Mayor Higgins.
Here.
And we have the floor.
Good. Before we get started, let me just go over a couple of quick sort of ground rules. I haven't seen many of these faces at the meeting in the past. We do have an informal, well, we have an ordinance that allows a five-minute comment period for each individual. We try to observe that, you know, kind of loosely. With the number of folks here, and I'm assuming the number of questions that are likely, please do try to, you know, when the time comes to ask questions about ordinances come up, try to be succinct, and don't make me have to, you know, kind of push you a little bit, because we want everybody to have a chance to ask the questions they'd like to. Tom Burns is our planner, and he has got a presentation. Tonight is an opportunity to tell not just a story about the ordinances up for adoption tonight, but the sort of the whole continuum of affordable housing, where we started, what the rules are, what our numbers are, where they used to be, what they've come down to. So I'd like you all to think about this. We have a public comment period coming up. That's the standard one. There's another one all the way at the end. If you've got a question about something other than affordable housing, come on up and ask it. But if it's about affordable housing, let him tell the story, set the stage. It may answer some questions. It may generate some questions. But I think everybody would be better off if we hold the, you know, the ordinance-related ones after this presentation. We'll put that up first before we go forward with the adoption period. So just bear with us on that. Hopefully we can convey a lot of information tonight and, you know, get the meeting moving along in a timely manner. So thank you. Okay, the first item up is approval of meeting minutes. The first one is the regular session meeting minutes from June 27. Are there any comments, questions, edits from council?
I have none. I'll make a motion to
second.
Adopt those
minutes.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next item, the July 11 regular session meeting minutes. The same entreaty from me to the council.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed or abstaining? Thank you again. And the last minute approval is for the regular session on August 8. And I'll make the motion this time.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed or abstaining? Thank you. Now we are up to what's called the consent agenda. These are items that are considered routine and may be voted on all at once. And it'll be a roll call vote for this sort of thing, since there's money involved. First item is authorizing a premium refund for Block 90, Lot 4, change order number 2, which actually reduced the price of Phase 1 of rebuilding Stanton Mountain Road. An item accepting the results of the 2017 annual audit, and also accepting the corrective action plan. We had a couple of routine items that were cited there that we sort of took care of earlier this year. The release of a performance bond for Chase Bank. Their building is done. The reduction of a performance bond for the Hanna Memorial Cancer Clinic. That's that large structure that's under construction, finally, at the juncture of Route 22 and Petticoat. It's a nonprofit cancer infusion clinic. And it's well underway at this point in time. Release of performance guarantees and escrow. And then finally, authorizing the execution of a developer's agreement with Beaverbrook Urban Renewal Associates, LLC, Block 60.03, Lot 26. This is a normal construction-related developer's agreement with the folks that are developing a 66-unit affordable housing complex at the juncture of Beaver Avenue and Austin Hill Road. They have a pre-con meeting with the township. It's fully approved and funded. They have a pre-con meeting with the township next week, and you should see some construction starting before the end of the month, assuming the pre-construction meeting goes well next week. So Any questions or discussion from council?
I have but one on the audit. We have a new CFO, so we're pretty sure that these items that were...
These are all holdovers.
...will not recur.
Correct.
Correct.
On top of
a plan that will take care of them.
Thank you, Brian. All right. In that case, I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
Councilwoman Switwick?
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynski?
Yes.
Councilman Nolay?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes. Thank you. We're up to our first public comment period. If any members of the public have a comment question on, please, something other than the affordable housing ordinances, come on up. We're happy to.
Up is there.
Yes. Come forward, I should say.
Sign in.
Oh, yeah. Could you tell us your name and just sign in, please?
Unrelated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just come on up. Just we got to get you close to a microphone because we tape all this stuff and make it available right after the meeting.
Yeah.
Sure.
This is related to 10 Concord Road.
Oh.
Well, are you familiar?
Yes. We're very familiar with that
you
mess.
Please state your name and address.
Yeah.
Sir, I'm sorry. Can you please just fill out that paper name and address for the record?
Is this after that one?
Yeah. Well, this is after.
Oh, okay.
That's after you.
I can tell you the history that we know, and we've been after that developer, that purchaser, rather, for the better part of 3 years. This is a house that was purchased for renovation. It was a wreck before it was purchased. There were holes in the roof and the walls. The chimney had detached itself from the house. It was leaning away from it, the Leaning Tower of Pizza effect. And we forced him to clean up the lot. One trot. No, I came in with a brush hog and at least got the big, giant things out of the way. Made a mess out of it. And he's demolished a portion of it. He came in for a foundation permit and built part of it out. And there it sits. So I'm going to ask Mr. Landon. We had asked our building inspector to be as nasty as he possibly can with this mess. And
he's been out there, and I do believe this is on our new list of
part of the reason
abandoned, vacant. Yeah. We did an ordinance for this kind of problem, and so he was probably one of the first people that got noticed, clean it up and seal it up, and so take some action to clean it, and that's in conjunction with the construction official. So we're working on that right now.
When was that ordinance, Jess? That was only about a month ago, right?
Yeah.
Right?
These ordinances that you have implemented, I don't know if you're following up and holding them to it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's only been a month.
Can I
read
my
statement
so I get it on the record?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm here this evening for two reasons. First, I want to express my concerns for what has been allowed to occur in my neighborhood. And second, learn what action this council has taken and is taking to correct the situation at 10 Concord Road. Regarding the conditions at number 10, if any of you have been there, they're deplorable. Many of the violations addressed in the township ordinances pertaining to vacant, abandoned property exist at number 10. For example, issues of health, safety, vermin, insects, mold, excessive weeds, value deterioration of the properties in the area. There's been virtually no effort by the owners to abide by the township ordinances. Concord Realty Holdings, LLC, took ownership of this property October 2014, just about 4 years ago. But some of the same conditions existed 5 to 6 years ago. Since the property owner is not maintaining the property to the standards described in the township ordinances, I believe it's time for this council to step in and have the violations corrected and charging the cost back to the owner. This brings me to the second reason for being here, which is to determine what the council has done and is planning to do to remedy this situation. Going forward, what is the council's time-phased action plan. Thank you for
that. Sure. Like I said, this situation has been a thorn in our side. And you're right. As I said, the gentleman that passed away who was living in there with a hole in the roof, which was pretty amazing to me, started it. And this guy bought it, and he gives us a song and dance about, I'm going to fix it, going to fix it, need a little more time. So our patience ran out a couple of years ago. And we've applied pressure through the building department, which then forced partial demolition because the structure was not safe at all. I can't say that what we have now is an improvement over the other situation. We thought it would sort of move them along. And I've asked our building inspector to look at it and see if we could somehow condemn it, force it to be fenced off. Well, ma'am, to go in and actually demolish the thing on our own is a very difficult and time-consuming process. So what we can do is apply as much pressure as we possibly can by forcing them to start to spend money out there, whether it's a fence, whether it's hauling him into court. And again, we had just, this house and another one closer to the high school were sort of catalysts for us to pass an ordinance, which just came into effect about a month ago. That requires property owners to register these properties and start paying us money. And if they don't improve the condition of the property, we then have additional recourse, which we'll take. So we're familiar with it, but personal property rights are very strong in this state. And it's difficult to actually walk in, you know, get a track hoe out there and knock the darn thing down, which is what I would certainly prefer, and I think we would prefer.
According, though, to your ordinance, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, you do have that authority to do that.
Under?
And bill it back to the owner?
Demolish it?
Mm-hmm.
Under what conditions?
Under the abandoned property ordinances?
That ordinance just came in. Our abandoned property ordinance was just last month.
I think we passed it in July, and it took 30 days.
You might be confusing that with the construction code ordinance, which is a whole different thing. In that case, the house, as long as the owner is making some reasonable progress, we can't do that. If that's what you're referring
to. There's no reasonable progress. It's actually getting worse by the day. And, you know, no disrespect, but all your citations and your ordinances and your aggressive communication with them is proven to be unsuccessful.
It's been very frustrating.
Well, yes, and you live across the street from that every single day and have to wake up every single morning and look at that. I don't think you would like that across the street from your home.
I don't like it in our township, period. And we've been trying to exert as much pressure as we can. Now, if you've seen rats and health issues, that kind of thing, that's a county issue, the county health department.
I'll refer that to the health department.
Okay. I mean, have you?
Well, it's not only that, it's the black mold that blankets that whole structure. The fire potential, there's no fire hydrants on Concord Road. So if there's a fire there that has to be fought, it'll take that structure down and the structures alongside of it. The weeds, I don't know, the last time you visited that property, 10 feet tall. 10 feet.
Well, let's get back to some levers that we have that we've not explored. Have you observed, you've talked about vermin before, have you observed rats and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Or, okay.
People are dumping tires there.
Mm-hmm.
People are dumping trash, stagnant water, mosquitoes. I have a dog. The likelihood of him getting ticks.
Let's.
I understand you're trying to have compassion for the owner.
I have no compassion for the owner.
Well, it appears to be that way, and they're not even taxpayers. They're not paying their taxes.
But we also have to abide by the law.
I understand.
And operate within the.
So, I think a good lever, if in fact there are health issues there, and I'm not an expert on mold in a building that's detached from all the other buildings, but that's the kind of thing where we could involve the county, have them come out and take a look. That is a good lever. It's a difficult lever to, it's difficult for them to find actionable items. But this house is, you know, beyond the pale. So that would produce some fairly quick results. And we can certainly go back and force him to clean up the, you know, the tall weeds.
What is the time frame on that? I mean, you say you can go back to him and force him to do something. Is there any time frame that he's required to do that?
I don't know sitting here, but if he doesn't conform, we haul him into court. What would I say, a couple of weeks or a month?
I just saw Mr. Wright, I think it was July 24th.
Mm-hmm.
He was at number 10 because I guess he wanted to see if the windows and doors had been boarded up and if the fence was effective around the property. Well, I guess the boards were up there, but according to your ordinance, he didn't meet that anyway, but it was blocked off. But Wright's comment was, I'm not happy with the fence. Well, that was July 24th. So what's being done?
We will.
Is there anything from getting in there?
We will do whatever we can with Mr. Wright to get him out there.
What means can the town put to demolish the building? You could just identify yourself for the record.
My name is Steve Walburn. I'm the son-in-law.
Okay. I don't know the demolition laws. I know they take years. I've seen that previously in the county. It's been talked about in newspapers over the years. It's a long, tedious process.
We'll be giving this guy 4 years. I'm start the process now while we're going through all this legwork because,
We will note your complaint. We'll sit down with our zoning officer. We'll sit down with the building officer, the code officer, and basically apply as much pressure as we can.
But I also think the problem is the communication between the owners of Concord Road and you or the township. I haven't seen, even when I tried to speak to the zoning officer and the building officer, they were evasive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the frustration also that we're having is we have to go through so many steps and now we're at our boiling point. I think somehow the township should communicate better with the residents of Concord Road.
Well, now that you've opened the door, we can.
Okay.
It's
a shame that we had to bring it to you. We went through the township. I'm a retired police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just getting to you or you haven't heard any of the complaints from Mr. Donatelli and the rest. So I know there was a woman who passed away who was also trying to work on it.
I worked with her for a couple of years. Yeah. Believe me, this has been a problem.
I understand that.
We're trying to work.
But again, from where we're sitting,
I understand.
We see nothing, and now you're saying that it's a long process. Well, they've had 4 years. Okay, so I think we should start that process as well as creating conversations between the residents of Concord Grove.
We're going to sit down. The four of us will sit down, and I can't promise you we're going to start a demolition process. I don't know if that's the answer.
Okay.
But we'll investigate what we can do to increase the pressure. And you've been here now, so drop us a line. We'll do the same thing. Leave an email or an address.
I sent you an email.
When?
In August. I think it was August 14th. August 14th. There's a note in your minutes of, is it May? May of last year?
Yeah.
That the Councilwoman Switlick had looked into it or something.
Yeah, May 24th, Councilwoman Switlick informed you that she received an email regarding 10 Concord Road. And at that time, you suggested the construction official to take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't received any updates since.
Well, who would we update?
Update it by action.
Action. Just look at it.
I understand, but we've brought this up a couple of times at council. This is the first time that I can recall somebody appearing at council to make the complaint, I guess is all I'm saying. So you've made your issue known, how you feel about it, how strongly you feel about it. We will respond by sitting down and developing the most strenuous action plan that we can.
Okay.
We just don't know what it is sitting here tonight.
Including maybe possible court orders to get that structure demolished?
I don't know whether I could say that or not. I don't know the law sitting here tonight.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying, just for...
If we can...
The building's leaning, and there is a gaping hole that any child or animal or anything can fall into.
There comes a point when, you know, it's so unsafe, the building officer is... That'll be part of the conversation.
No, I understand that, but okay. I'm presenting to you and letting you know... And also putting on record so it needs to be known so we can start doing something about it.
Fair enough.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
I'm sorry you guys are...
Oh, we'll be back. We'll be back.
Please.
It's been a thorn in our side, too. I know you don't want
to... Excuse me?
It's been a thorn in our side for a long time. I know it doesn't make you feel better because you sit across the street from it.
It doesn't, but at least it's something to start.
Yeah. And give...
Even if it takes mold.
Well, we have an ordinance for that, so we can force that or fine them for it. Okay? So...
8 to 10 feet.
I saw the picture.
10 inches in the ordinance.
Correct. That one I know by heart because we've done it, you know. But it's that structure that's the killer. It's awful.
I almost think the trees were better up front.
Yeah.
We didn't have to see the house. When they did that, I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will get on it. But give us a call. Drop us a line. Jesse and I are the two people you want to talk to on that because at the end of the day. Okay. Better. Anybody else?
Do I sign in?
Please just say your name and address and sign in and let us know what's on your mind.
Good evening. I'm Betty Hughes. My husband and I have lived on Fairview Avenue in Clinton Township for 20 years. The section of Fairview Avenue that's in the town of Clinton, is in fine shape.
I know where you're going. Can I help?
However, when the section of Fairview Avenue in Clinton Township, which is in between Harrison Street and Gray Rock Road, is in deplorable condition. In the 20 years that we've lived there, we've never seen any patching, repaving. Actually, I don't think there's one light on the light pole. Matter of fact, I only have the New York Times delivered 3 days a week, and those three nights, I leave my lights on bright outside so the paper boy can throw it on my lawn.
It'll
be gone. But anyway, I feel that it should be repaved soon. The section of Fairview Avenue that we live in Clinton Township is traveled more frequently now because of two reasons. Number one, the Goddard School is down the hill on the corner of Fairview and Gray Rock Road. So naturally there's an increase of traffic because parents take their children to the school 5 days a week and pick the kids up. Second of all, on Gray Rock Road, probably about 6 months ago, a company called JR Site Planning.
Can I tell you what's going on?
Kind of know.
The doctor is in.
Yes, it's supposed to go in there.
Yeah.
However, JR Site Planning began pulled all the trees out. Mm-hmm. It's on a slope. And as far as I know, I don't have any true evidence of this contract, but one of my neighbors, who was a former police officer, and it's pretty reliable information, told me the people on the very last road, it's 42 Fairview, Their back of their house extends over this half, this over Gray Rock. And apparently these owners, I don't even know them by name, but they sold a portion of the back of their land to whoever owns that lot.
Ah, okay.
That's what I was told. Anyway, that house now sits on a cliff. I don't know anything about building, but I would think they would have to put a retaining wall up. But my only concern is all the traffic flow. There's orange and white barrels up on Gray Rock Road. There's detour signs diverting traffic onto our road, Fairview Avenue, you know, through Clinton mm-hmm. and then coming up to. So there's a lot more traffic. Our road isn't getting any better. It really needs to be paved. I took the liberty of calling the road department in Clinton Township, and I spoke to a gentleman by the name of Jay Michael.
Jay Mixel, he's our DPW supervisor.
He told me they're aware that our road needs repaving.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of have it in the lineup.
he said,
if I understand what he said, because of the halt in the building down the road and the fact that water pipes and laterals will have to go through, they can't repave our road now because those will come from the town of Clinton and Clinton Township, Fairview Avenue, and go down the hill. So in other words, they don't want to dig up the road twice and
right.
repave it.
Right.
So all this work is stopped. When is it going to begin, and when are they going to put the pipes in so we can have a road in? I mean, it seems like it's going to last forever.
That particular project, it's called Zinn Realty. It was the subject of a Board of Adjustment proceeding. And unfortunately, a certain individual who's very litigious decided to file a lawsuit. And
who filed a lawsuit?
One of our more litigious township residents. And that took probably 2 years to adjudicate. It was filed, they lost, then it was appealed.
This was some time ago.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. That's why the whole process has taken, getting to the point where they were actually taking the trees down took so long. I don't know the construction schedule, but do you know Tom Yeager? Tom, if you roll down the hill right behind Finagle's, there's what was an engineer's office building. Looks like a house.
I know where you mean, yes.
Tom was by, I don't know, gosh, two or three meetings ago to push us along the same path, and we had all the roads surrounding the Goddard School pretty much scheduled for paving, but with all the construction going on there, we just can't do that until the construction gets to a certain point, or at least the big track machines are out of there.
But I think the question is, when is the construction really going to pick up and get moving? Is that something we could potentially find out from Mr. Wright?
We could ask.
Yeah. I mean, maybe delayed by the weather, all the rain we've had.
We have to, you know, go down. Our road is a very short road.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go down a hill. You can either turn left or right. If you turn right, you're on the dug-up road of Gray Rock Road.
Yep.
That's not getting any better, you know.
Well, I can say as soon as we have the opportunity to take care of it, we will. And Jess can talk with our building code official to get an idea of, you know, what is the holdup? Is it weather-related? As far as I know, I've heard nothing to the contrary, they've got all their permits. There's nothing on the part of the township that's caused a slowdown.
We've heard that the halt was because the workers, the site planning, weren't paid. So they get stopped working.
Okay, let's do our, you know, Mike Wright is usually pretty good about understanding that sort of stuff that goes on in the background, so we'll see what we can find out. We can get back to you.
Okay.
I'm sorry for the mess. All right, yeah.
Okay.
Leave an email.
If you could just put an email down there or phone number.
I'll put my phone number, address. Or
sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, so we will close the public comment period and move on to resolutions. The first item is an annual purchase, which badly needed materials. This is the purchase of rock salt. Looking at the per ton price, it's at 1,976 tons worth of rock salt if we buy it all. And it's bought through the county co-op. Any questions or...
John.
Oh, excuse me. I'll read the title. It's a resolution authorizing the purchase of rock salt from Morton Salt through the Hunterdon County Purchasing Co-op. Any questions or discussion?
I got an email today from the DEP that the Windy Acres, well, that was approved. You know, the cleanup,
yeah.
Emergency permit, we got it today.
Okay.
So we can start as soon as we have the money in place.
Oh, first
meeting. We'll get to that one.
Oh, okay.
I got to get the rock salt.
I was doing the rock salt.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Second.
Oh, wait. Who?
I move.
Ryan, Tom.
Okay. Councilwoman Switla.
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski.
Yes.
Councilman Malloy.
Yes.
Mayor Higgins.
Yes. Okay, now we are at a resolution authorizing a contract with Matrax Incorporated to install and rent a temporary bridge for Windy Acres site cleanup project. We purchased Windy Acres back in, gosh, it was 2008, if I remember, and there were some structures still on the site. We've cleaned up any of the farmer's dumps and any sort of hazardous waste that was left over there, which cost us a fair penny. This then cleans the, gets rid of a swimming pool. There are some structures that need to be demolished. It brings a bridge in, which is it's a temporary bridge. The Army guys would call it a Bailey bridge. And we're hoping to, at long last, kind of leave that thing in place so we actually have a functional bridge. We will repair the bridge that exists and has been in awful shape for about 10 years. And probably have this Bailey bridge on top of it to make double sure, so we'll have robust access to the site. So this would authorize us to get that temporary bridge.
And the bond ordinance to pay for all that is coming up.
Okay.
So, to pay for the cleanup.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and all everything is in.
And that's a C1 stream, so the DEP is very picky about what you do there, so we've gotten permission from them now to do the repairs to the bridge abutments. Okay. Terrific.
We're moving along.
All right. I'll make the motion.
Second.
Councilwoman Switla.
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski.
Yes.
Councilman Malloy.
Yes.
Mayor Higgins.
Yes. And now we're on to introduction of ordinances. First one is ordinance number 1123-18. It's an ordinance amending subsection 198-4M, period, vehicle parking in chapter 198, parks, recreation areas, and open space of the Code of the Township of Clinton to address the use of parking areas, including trailhead parking areas. This relates to, and there's one little typo there I'll talk to you about later, we are going to construct a parking spot for a small gravel parking lot on the Marukian parcel, which begins on the south side of the high school. And the intent of this parking lot is to have people that want to run, pedal, do whatever on our 5K path around that parcel to have a place to park. We do not want high school kids parking there during the school year. To enable us to prohibit that and subject whoever parks there inappropriately, we need to pass this ordinance. And we're also contemplating a small parking lot at the Prostack.
Yes,
the Prostack properties.
October, November. So it'll cover that one, too.
Yeah. And again, it's part of improving public access to our open space lands. Any questions or comments from council?
I'll make the motion.
It's very much needed. I'll second.
Okay.
Councilwoman Switla.
Yes.
Councilman Kaczynowski.
Yes.
Councilman Malloy.
Yes.
Yes. The next resolution is, the next ordinance is number 1124-18. It's an ordinance of the Township of Clinton in Hunterdon County, New Jersey, accepting the rededication of a previously vacated portion of Center Street in accordance with ordinance number 1070-15 and pursuant to NJSA 48:12-1 at SEC. This is an odd situation where the Country Griddle used to be. The building actually protruded into the right-of-way, as near as we could determine the right-of-way. And there was a parking space that intruded into the right-of-way. We couldn't really demolish a corner of the building and take our right-of-way back, so we sort of gave it to them. The bank is in there now, so this basically takes that right-of-way property back. That's the somewhat convoluted explanation of this. Any concerns?
No, it's part of the requirements of the deed when that conveyance is issued. So I'll move this introduction.
I'll second it.
Councilwoman Switley?
Yes.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Millay?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes. The next one is ordinance number 1125-18. It's a bond ordinance providing for the demolition and removal of certain structures on and the clearing of the Windy Acres site by and in the township of Clinton in the county of Hunter and state of New Jersey, appropriating $500,000 therefore and authorizing the issuance of $476,000 in bond or notes of the township to finance part of the cost thereof. And this relates to what I described before, us obtaining a temporary bridge, which will become a permanent bridge, affecting repairs to the old structure and removing some other structures. I hope not to spend all this money on it, but you want to be sure when you take this action there is enough just in case.
And just to be clear, this is not a $250,000 new bridge.
Correct.
That's something talked about as potentially building on.
Yeah. So this sets Windy Acres up, I think, for more use in from an open space perspective. It'll provide better public access and reduce some of the hazards that are out there in the property that really make us nervous about public access at this point. It's about 300 acres, so it cost us $7 million to buy the darn thing, so it's a good investment.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Councilwoman Switlick?
Yes.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Millay?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes. And the final ordinance introduction is ordinance number 1126-18. It's a bond ordinance providing for the purchase of sewer capacity for the planned and future projects by and in the township of Clinton in the county of Hunter and state of New Jersey, appropriating $525,000, therefore, and authorizing the issuance of $500,000 in bonds or notes of the township to finance part of the cost thereof. This represents, as we're going to talk about momentarily, we've got a number of different projects in our affordable housing plan, three of which are sponsored, 100% affordable housing projects sponsored by the township. On those projects, we need to provide the utilities, or at least hold on to the utilities for future conveyance. We have acquired every gallon of free sewage available from CTSA, which is our sewage authority. Again, if you don't know the split, I see Mayor Kovach back there. Her town runs the sewer plant, and then we pump our stuff through a variety of pump lift stations into their system. And we, as I said, we are allocated a certain amount of sewage from Clinton Town. We have scarfed up everything that we can that's free. And now there is a lawyer that way back when Beaverbrook was built acquired rights to about 65,000 gallons, give or take, of sewage capacity. So we're buying what we need to finish out the requirements for our 300% municipally sponsored projects. And we have obtained, a reasonable discount from his asking price. So I think it's a well-thought-out plan. And we can stop after this, as far as we're concerned, acquiring sewer capacity. Any questions from council? Nope. I'll make the motion on this one.
I'll second it.
Councilwoman Switlick?
Yes.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Millay?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Yes.
And then the public hearing for all four of these ordinances will be on the 10th of October.
Thank you. Okay, now we're up to, I think, what everybody pretty much came for. And let's do one of these first. This is an ordinance, 1119-18. It's an ordinance amending Chapter 2 and Chapter 220 of the Code of the Township of Clinton regarding individual subsurface sewage disposal systems, aka known as septic systems. We have a stipulation in our township code. I'll back up. The township council acts, as of a couple of years ago, as the Board of Health. So normally when you have a septic system fail, the horror that all of us that live on septic face from time to time, you hire somebody and you go down to the county. The county takes care of it, all the paperwork, the approvals, and everything else. If the repair causes a variance, then our citizens have to pay an engineer to come up here. The county sends us a letter saying, you know, we like everything except we have this variance issue with one of your township stipulations. So it costs time and money for our citizens. And these particular stipulations we always say yes to. The setbacks from water courses and property lines are twice as strict with us than the state requires. We have never said no to a repair that encroaches on those more stringent requirements, so we feel it's time to remove those from our ordinances and save our citizens time and money.
And we can just be consistent, really.
Right.
Makes
and
sense.
The county can take care of virtually everything.
And this applies only to repair and replacement of a life-size system that doesn't include expansion of the system.
Correct.
So you can't take a two-bedroom septic under this ordinance and expand it to a four-bedroom septic.
Yeah.
So that's, and skip a variance. For that, you'd still have to apply.
Correct. Yeah, you go through the whole process for an expansion like that. So any issues from council? So we'll open the public hearing on that. And are there any comments or issues, concerns on the part of the public? I don't see any movement. Please.
I'm sorry. Can I just ask you to speak louder?
Oh, you know, I'm
such a very nice soft voice.
I get hollered at. You know, I'm going to move this up on top of my pad because I get hollered at all the time. I'm sorry. I just am soft-spoken. No. It's not you. It's certainly me. So I'll try to do better. No, thanks for raising it. I forget from time to time. So, does anybody have a concern about this change? I don't see anybody. The septic stipulations. Okay.
Come on up. You'll have to fight your way to the front.
My name is Betsy Hassreimer. I live over at Beaverbrook, and I'm not a building person. So my question is, what is the consequence of approving the septic portion as it relates to building other units elsewhere?
Oh, none.
Okay.
None. No, this is
an existing system.
Yeah.
So if you have a single-family, usually a single-family detached house that has an existing septic system that is failing and you have to replace it, but by replacing it, you have to encroach in certain setbacks that the town has established. It waives certain of those so that you can at least maintain occupancy of the residence.
Of the existing structure.
Correct.
Thank
yeah.
You.
No, it has nothing to do with anybody that has public utilities.
What I was saying yes to.
Could you also please sign the
yes.
I don't think we got your full name.
Okay. Anyone else?
An address, right?
All right. Well, I'll close the public hearing and ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Councilwoman Switlick?
Yes.
Councilman Kochanowski?
Yes.
Councilman Malay?
Yes.
Mayor Higgins?
Okay, yes.
That'll save a lot of time.
Okay, so I think at this point in time, I would ask Tom Burns, our planner, from Burgess Associates, to... I'm getting hollered at again. Give us a little presentation, and I would urge council, with the exception of Tom, council has been part of this whole affordable housing miasma for at least 3 years. So I would urge council, if I'm saying the wrong thing, you know, I'm not perfect by any stretch, just wade in, make your comments, and, I want a good dialogue, because we really do want to tell the story of affordable housing, and we do want to address any general questions you have, and then, you know, we'll get ourselves into the specifics project by project. You're on. And here's my notes.
About is this?
No. That'll work.
I was saying I apologize for the distortion. It's a function of our technology and the angle with the projector and the screen. So, without further ado, my name is Tom Behrens. I'm a professional planner with Burgess Associates. We are the township's professional planning consultant. Among other planning activities, we have been involved in helping the township address its third round affordable housing obligation. To which end the township has adopted its third round housing element and fair share plan in May of this year, and we're here now to implement that plan. And the governing body is considering various ordinances to implement the various plan mechanisms as well as the development regulations that are included in the plan and which we're going to be discussing. So I'd just like to give an overview of the township's obligation, how the township plans to address that obligation, the various sites that are included in the plan, and hopefully that will help clarify some of the outstanding issues.
So again, I apologize for the distortion. But the issue of affordable housing in New Jersey and that municipalities have this obligation in the first place stems back to the Supreme Court's decision in 1975, known as the Mount Laurel 1 decision, in which the court established that every developing municipality has an obligation to provide for its fair share of affordable housing. And this all came about, basically, there was a community of sharecroppers in Mount Laurel that had occupied some property for a number of generations, and they wanted to improve their living conditions, so they came up with a plan to develop their settlement, which did not meet the local zoning parameters, so when they went to apply, they were denied, and inciting the economic difficulties they had experienced in trying to conform with the zoning, the mayor famously said something to the effect of, well, if you can't afford to live here, you should probably move. And so that case made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they decided not only that Mount Laurel has a fair share obligation, but now the rest of New Jersey does. So that's sort of how it all began. It's obviously a little more complicated than that. So a period of time goes by. And municipalities haven't done much, primarily because the court just stated that towns, now you have this obligation, but there's really no framework or guidelines or any way for a town to figure out how they can achieve that. And in recognizing this, the court decided the 1983 Mount Laurel 2 decision. So one part of that was they called on the state legislature to enact legislation that would create such a framework. And at the same time, they also decided that communities that are growing in growth areas will have a larger obligation. So the legislature did follow through and enacted the Fair Housing Act in 1985, which created the framework for the establishment of COA, which stands for the Council on Affordable Housing. And they are the state agency that is responsible for implementing regulations and coming up with these affordable housing obligations and assigning them to various municipalities. That worked for the first two rounds, the first one beginning in 1987 and lasting until 1993. Also worked for the second round, which went from 1993 to 1999. They get to 1999, tried to change things up, came up with a different methodology, which made its way to the Supreme Court. It was challenged, and they just couldn't get it right. There were a few different iterations that kept getting shot down. And finally, the court got fed up with them.
and gave them one last chance in about 2014. When it came time to vote on those final regulations, they were deadlocked in a 3-3 vote. Nothing happened. Nothing was going anywhere. So Fair Share Housing Center, which is a state affordable housing advocate, filed a motion in aid of litigants' rights to the Supreme Court, and through which in 2015... So to that end, the Supreme Court regrouped to discuss the affordable housing issue in 2015, known as the Mount Laurel 4 decision. They took over the affordable housing issues from COA, basically citing their dysfunction, and established a process moving forward. That process, however, while stating that municipalities should go back to the second round rules, didn't come up with numbers as COA had previously assigned. So again, it left municipalities to sort of figure things out on their own. So in coming up with numbers, Fair Share Housing Center hired their own expert, again, the affordable housing advocate, who had relatively high numbers, and a group of municipalities, about 200-something, hired a separate expert to come up with their own numbers, which happened to be a bit lower at the time, eConsult Solutions. And there were a few other experts, but those were the primary two that had been considered throughout the process. It took a few more years until that was really resolved or came to a head. And if you flip, one of the questions was, do municipalities have this obligation from 1999 to 2015 when basically COA was not functioning at all? And the court decided that, well, yes, you do. So now, you know, here we are in 2018. This was back in 2015. Not only do you have, you know, the next 10 years, you know, till 2025, you've also got to cover the last 15. So it was a bit disappointing to most municipalities, but those were the rules of the game. And then, and Brian?
Can I just throw in some numbers? Just, you know, to be so, you know, I'm not, we haven't rehearsed this before. We've both been very busy.
Please do.
So, but we, the Supreme Court has ruled definitively that the first two rounds, those numbers are inviolate. You've got to, there's no debate, there's no nothing, you're going to have to do them. Our numbers from that period are 335. We still have 167 to do. We paid for what was called an RCA, I think it was $1.2 million to, made a check out to New Brunswick, and they used our funds to improve housing stock in their area. That became illegal in 1988, if I have my year correctly. 1999? Okay.
A little more recent.
All right, but that's no longer a lever that we can use. So the result of that is about 1.5 of our 100% projects are being employed to satisfy the pre-1999 requirements, which, again, are they're not subject to change. There's no wiggle room on that. And the others are obviously, together with the inclusionary development projects, are designed to satisfy everything going forward. But I'll just give you some numbers. We, that early period, as I say, we had a need of 335 units. 167 remained to be generated. And we're generating that, taking care of that requirement by about 105 physical apartments and about 70 rental units, rental bonus credits. One of the reasons we like rental units, an important reason is that you do get extra bonus credits for rental units, and we don't have to build more physical units. Now, looking forward, as Tom said, the township was actually part of that consortium of between 200 and 200. I think we topped out at some point 260 towns, something like that. And there's 565 or so in the state. We took that to the Supreme Court twice. Both of those appearances, our attorney, John Drill, our planning board attorney, was there. I sat through one and watched the other one by video. And I have to say, I think John, in both cases, was the guy that provided the least harmful solution to the judges. And those judges were not happy to be hearing this. They had just run out of patience. And to be very honest, Governor Christie didn't make it dysfunctional. He made COA non-functional. he refused to name sufficient people to have a quorum to have a meeting. So it almost baited the courts into taking this over, which they did. And during the course of this whole legal wrestling match, our number began at 1,454 units. That was the first report issued by the developers. By law, by the regulations in force at that time, that was dropped down to 913 units. We have about 4,600 dwelling units in our township. When you hit 20%, you can't go above that. So the real need, per their calculations, like I said, 1,454, but the law dropped it down to 913, which is still a totally crazy number. And that was in early 2015. In June of 2015, the township, we talked about this for 10 years or so, we decided we would conform to the Regional Master Plan of the Highlands, the RMP. And what that does, it does two things. It channels development where you've got utilities, whether public water and public sewer. Because if you're on septic, you need at least 10 acres to build a residential dwelling unit. And in some parts of the township, it goes up to 25 acres. There's some special environmental areas up toward the border with Tewksbury. We did that very purposely. The environmental reason to do it was to preserve the quality and quantity of groundwater. But we knew that opting in effectively made almost all of the township non-developable when you calculate COA needs, the affordable housing needs. And I would say, we don't have a precise number in this, but I would say our numbers dropped from that 1,454 to 600 or so. So that was the first big step that we did as a township to get things more reasonable. And then we began negotiating with Fair Share Housing Center, and that went on for a good long time. There were two iterations of the plan, and we ended up with an obligation looking forward to 2025, 1999 to 2025, of 337 units. A certain elected official from days gone by keeps saying 373, the number is 337. And again, with the bonus credits, we have 279 physical apartment units to build, and we're employing 58 rental bonus credits to take care of that. And do we want to talk about inclusionary versus...
Well, let them run through a little bit, and I would just point out something that I noticed. You know what? We'll skip along and I'll point it out.
Yeah.
Are you ready to move on?
There's one more court decision that was decided this year, Judge Jacobson's decision. As I mentioned, there was a question as to the methodology, and all the municipalities and regions were really looking to this particular judge in Mercer County to rule on that. So she made her ruling in March, and to the mayor's point about the obligation and how the township was able to reduce it, had we waited to settle with Fair Share Housing Center until this decision was rendered, we'd probably be looking at a higher obligation at this point, which would obviously result in more units and more development. So it turned out to be in our advantage to move things along in the way that we did. So thank you. Just a few recent actions the township has taken with regard to this new process. So in December 13th, 2017 was the first time we had reached the settlement agreement with Fair Share Housing Center. That agreement was amended in February of this year. Yes, sir.
This is 2018, December 13th. We were not there yet.
Correct. So that would be a typo then, I would assume.
Which is?
What is that?
That's the ordinance.
Yeah, it's a typo. Thank you.
That's why we have these meetings.
Yep.
So we'll make a note of that for the
Yeah.
I hope that's all.
I was going to say, I haven't been to the future as far as I know, so... So February 5th, that settlement agreement was amended primarily to remove
Windy Acres from the plan. April 3rd of this year, the court approved that settlement agreement and also set forth the requirements moving forward in the timeline, which the clock is ticking on, and hence why we're here. You know, as I mentioned, we adopted the housing plan in May of 2018. Some of these ordinances that we're here to discuss tonight were first introduced in August, on August 8th of this year, and here we are tonight in September to for the council to entertain the adoption of at least a few ordinances tonight. And so the mayor discussed this a little bit. So as he mentioned, we at the beginning of the process when the court took over, we did start out with an obligation of 1,400 units. And that was just for the period of 1999 to 2025. The obligations of the rehabilitation in the prior round were pretty much fixed and consistent across all the numbers by the various experts. So we were able to whittle that number of 1,400 down to 337, which is a better, call it a deal, than most towns have achieved at this point.
And just to be clear, Tom, so here we've got, for a period of about 12 years, obligation 335 units.
That's correct.
And for a period of 26 years,
yes,
337.
Correct. And you may also notice that 2025 is, you know, it's, we're almost at 2019, so we've got 6 years to do 25 years worth of work. So just, again, to help further explain, you know, where we are today. The mayor touched on this a little bit. This is how the township is addressing its prior round obligation. Again, that is the period from 1987 to 1999. The first two rounds, we have some prior cycle credits, which are things that were done prior to the first round, 13 credits without controls. We have a regional contribution agreement with New Brunswick, basically where we were able to send some money to the city at the time and in order for them to build some units and would get credit for that. That approach is no longer legal or valid, so no longer an option to any municipality. There are a number of inclusionary developments, which are developments that include both market rate and affordable developments, as well as some group homes. And you can see there's a few different developments there that result in several credits. We have an 100% affordable project, that is the Beaverbrook Homestead project. There was a redevelopment plan, which I'll explain a little bit further in a bit. There are 66 units of all affordable housing there, and there are two more municipally sponsored projects. One is the what's known as the Fox Seals site, or the former municipal building site in Annandale in the historic district, and the other is the Marukian site on Route 31 South. And this chart illustrates how the township is addressing its prospective round obligation. Again, that 25, 26-year period from 1999 to 2025. It includes several inclusionary developments, the Headley Farm Estate, which is a 155-acre tract. There will be 104 units generated out of there. There is also the Alton Place development site, which will generate 28 affordable units. And we have another 100% project at the LeComp site, which is actually just, I think I'm looking in the right direction, just south of here, which will generate another 89 affordable units. And again, we're taking some credits from the Marukian site. And so I just also wanted to point out, so just to cover the first round, or the prior round obligation that ends in 1999, we had to come up with developments today just to get to that point, which was the 66-unit, 100% project from the Beaverbrook site and part of the Marukian site, just to catch up to begin thinking about this third round that we're in now. So just wanted to bring up that point. In accordance with the Supreme Court's decision, you know, in starting this new process and the prevailing regulations, there are a few tools that we're able to take advantage of, or compliance mechanisms, as they're also called. So in this endeavor, we try to maximize the amount of bonus credits that are available. So these are credits that you would get for rental housing up to, there is a cap, but you would get 2-to-1 for rental housing, 1 1/3 credits for senior housing, and similar type bonus credits. So through those two charts that I just showed you, which cover our fair share plan, we were able to generate 133 bonus credits. So they're not physical units. They're just bonus credits that we got by creating these various development opportunities. We were also able to maximize the number of 100% projects that the township was able to put into its plan. So it has three such 100% projects, which is pretty much is the most that you're allowed to go and the most that we've seen throughout this process. And the benefit of that is, just to use round numbers, you're able to achieve, let's say, 100 affordable units, where if this was done in an inclusionary development, you would have the developer gets the incentive. So, okay, he'll build the 100 affordable with the ratio of 4 market rate units to 1 affordable. So instead of having 100 units, you're looking at 500 units. So obviously there was an advantage to this approach. We've also included some age-restricted housing, which exists and are occupied at the Muse development in Annandale. Our inclusionary developments have a minimum of 20% set aside. The Headley site actually has a 26% affordable housing requirement, which is among the highest in the state at this point, and one of the reasons that it's been put into the plan. And the final component is what's known as a durational adjustment, which is basically a mechanism that allows the township to include sites that may not have the resources, the utilities, such as water or sewer infrastructure right now, because it's recognized there's just not enough to go around to meet the obligation, this obligation of several hundred units. So this is a mechanism that acknowledges, okay, you don't have it today, but when it is available, these sites will become viable and they will be developed in accordance with the plan. There are always questions about what does it mean to be able to occupy these units. What does low or very low income mean? And just to give an example, we're in Region 3, which is Hunterdon in Somerset, and the third county escapes me. But the way these income limits are established, they're basically a percentage of the median income of the region. So, for instance, the median income of the Region 3 for a three-person household is $94,000. So a moderate income would be, I think it's 50% of that, or 80% of that, excuse me. Low would represent 50% of that, and very low would be 30% of that figure. So, they're not unreasonable salaries, and they might be thought of, it could be a teacher, it could be a police officer just starting out, it could be, a senior resident. So there is a variety of people that are able to live and make use of these type of units. So in selecting the various sites for the township's fair share plan, in order to qualify, a site must provide a realistic opportunity for the creation of affordable housing. And this criteria includes that it must be available, that it must be approvable, developable, and suitable to the type of development being contemplated. And that criteria is a component of the regulations. The township's criteria went beyond that and went and looked at, they had to consider that there was sufficient land area for a site to be considered. It had to be located within an existing neighborhood or developed area of the township. It had to have direct or close access to regional roadways. It had to have adjacency to water and sewer infrastructure. It had to be devoid of environmental constraints to be developable. And again, we are in the Highlands region, so there are even more constraints that we must abide by. It must be consistent with surrounding development, and overall the project must work from a financial standpoint, and it has to be demonstrated that it does in order to be included in the plan. So this is just a map showing the distribution of sites throughout the township. And again, as you can see, they're generally clustered in developed areas of the township. They have to be within or very close to existing sewer service areas, and they are, as I noted, close to regional roadways. So heading into the first site included in our plan is the Fox Seals site, also known as the FMB zone. It's approximately 1 acre in size. It does have some historic value in that it dates back to, or its original components date back to approximately 1859, somewhere thereabout, and had subsequent additions.
That's the historic part right there.
Yes, and it's also, so it originally served as a general store, and was later taken over by the township at one point for its municipal offices, which I believe left in the early 2000s, so it's been vacant since, and the township has been trying to find a use for that. There was a post office, there was the fire department was there, and so since it was vacated, though, it's basically fallen into disrepair, and the township's been trying to find a viable use that ranged from a community center to housing to, gee, can we just knock it down and start from scratch, and because of its historic value, that was not an option. So the township underwent a redevelopment process by which they declared the site an area in need of redevelopment, which enabled them to create a zone and come up with a concept plan such as you're seeing. And that concept includes two buildings. It includes the preservation of just the original parts of the historic building, and it also includes a new building fronting Center Street. So the historic building, the plan is that it would include two apartments on the second floor and a residential, a restaurant use on the first floor with outdoor dining. The new building would have 10 units fronting Center Street. And the southerly parking area that has sort of been informally used as community parking would be subdivided and used for municipal purposes, used for the adjacent church and the community. So that there is a site plan application before the planning board that we're hoping to wrap up in the near future and get going on that. So it's certainly been long enough. So we're all looking forward to it, as I'm sure you are. The next site is the Beaverbrook Homestead, located along Beaverbrook Avenue and Austin Hill. It's about 10.65 acres. It's been developed with another historic building, the Beaverbrook Homestead. We'll call it the main house, and some other accessory buildings, including a smaller house and some sheds, barns, etc. This was another site that had a few development attempts that just turned out to be financially infeasible. So the last attempt, the township, again, went through a redevelopment process, found a developer who came up with a plan for the site, which included a 100% project, so 66 affordable units. They would renovate the existing historic structure, the main house only, for community building to preserve the character in that area, do extensive landscaping, and if you go to the next page, I think it turned out pretty nice, and you could see in the architecture that they really want the extra mile. And again, this is a 100% affordable project to be consistent with the historic building and also provide something nice for the community. And that's something that the township has demanded, not just from this site, but every affordable housing site. And this was one of the first that we contemplated and went through the process, so it sort of set the tone for all of the others in terms of demanding quality design, having a central green space, having a playground or a tot lot, and those sort of requirements.
And Tom, I heard from Ingerman today. Their pre-construction meeting is next week, and they hope to actually start construction perhaps by the end of September.
So we'll be getting going on that one, too. Making our way to the Marukian site, which is... excuse me? I'm hearing things. I need much today. The Marukian site, it's a township-owned parcel. It's approximately 140 acres located on Route 31 South and Regional Road to the north. It was purchased, most of it was purchased with open space funding, so the township was able to maintain rights to develop 6 acres of the parcel. So for the purpose of affordable housing. So in looking at this massive site and finding areas suitable for affordable housing, we took a look at the environmental constraints, came up with 3 areas that might work, and ultimately landed on the largest area to the southeast, Area B, I believe it is. It's a 19-acre sliver of which we could use 6 acres of it. And the intent was that we would use... can I borrow the pointer for a second? You've got your own point.
Yeah.
That is a point.
Oh.
So we would use this area right here. So it would have a decent offset from Route 31. It would be shielded by, not shielded, buffered by the extensive existing row of vegetation. And it would also be about 1,500 feet between the nearest house to the west.
Hold on for a
minute. Hold on. Okay. You never know. All right. Do you mind? Okay. So this is another site that has made some progress in terms of the development concept. The Planning Board approved the preliminary site plan application earlier this year, which, the final is going to look pretty consistent to this. There's 84 units of it's a 100% project with 84 units. Again, it features a central green area, community building. It has a very generous setback from Route 31. The goal was to preserve as much of the existing vegetation, which includes mature trees, to the east. Here it's below the development. Again, to sort of have the project nestled into the landscape and sort of not disturb the character of the corridor, but also to preserve the contiguous agricultural land so that it could be used and enjoyed in the future.
And for those curious as to the location, the building that exists currently on the lower left, that is Ball Trades. It'll give you an approximate location where it is.
I should also note that it is in close enough proximity to existing sewer and water infrastructure that are located just north.
It's adjacent.
It's adjacent for the most part. So, again, that was another criteria that the township had to consider in selecting its sites. 84 units over 6 years.
Affordable housing. And how was the children units altogether?
84. That was one of those 100% sites. So, again, if you had to multiply that times 5, you'd be looking at a much larger development elsewhere.
Sure.
Excuse me?
Does that change
from
58?
No, I think we were always looking at a similar figure. If you're referring to the charts before, it was divvied up between the prior round and the prospective round, if that's what you're referring to. I think that might be the case. And so what that yields also is about 14 units per acre, which is really the highest range. Next, moving to the 108 Alton Place site, which is has been designated, or which we're contemplating tonight, is the designation of the AH6 zone. It shares a border with the town of Clinton to the west. It's surrounded by several townhouse developments, obviously has the Beaver Brook Golf Course, you know, as the core of that area. The site itself is developed with a single family home at the southeast corner. The entire site's about, it's a little over 16 acres in size. And just looking at this, I think this image helps illustrate that it's sort of, I guess, a missing tooth in this sort of cohesive pattern of development. Again, there are several hundred townhouse units. Moving along. This is the concept that was prepared by the development entity that is looking at developing the site. It will be an inclusionary site that consists of 140 total units. We'll have a 20% affordable housing set aside, which will yield 28 affordable units included in that 140 units. There'll be a mix of approximately 43 multifamily units and 97 townhouse units. It'll yield approximately 8 dwelling units per acre, which is consistent with the surrounding. It's actually less in several cases. And it does have a 50-foot setback, or will have a 50-foot setback around each of the buildings. Again, it features a central green space. We're working on getting a community amenity there. This happens to be one of those durational adjustment sites and the lowest priority site in the township. By virtue of it being an inclusionary site and yielding the lowest amount of affordable housing units, it's still a good set aside of 20%, but basically it's last on the list to get the needed, to get the available water and sewer infrastructure. So, I don't want to say they're a ways off, but there's some time between them getting that, at which point they'd be eligible to submit a site plan to the Planning Board for consideration. There's a private entity. We'll be able to answer plenty of questions at some point.
We understand.
Understood.
Let's have a little order. There'll be a time for questions. There'll be a time for, ma'am, please.
So the next site is known as the LeCompte site. It happens to be right across Route 31 from the Marukian site, known as the LeCompte site. Again, this is another zone that we're considering tonight, the AH7 zone. The parcel is 40 acres in total, which the development entity has secured or will be has the option to purchase about 8.9 acres. And there are considerable environmental constraints to the north that are associated with Kramer's Creek. This site has been discussed previously for affordable housing in a different context several years ago, but it came back and, you know, for a 100% project, it made sense and has gone a long way for the township. Well, in looking at the concept, again, it's a 100% project. It will have 90 units, including 89 affordable units and one unit for the caretaker of the site. This yields a density of approximately 10 units per acre.
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Sure. 90 units over approximately 8.9 acres, so it'll have a density of about 10 units per acre and with a setback of about 100 feet from Route 31. And, again, the goal here was to have a generous setback, you know, away from the environmental constraints that would preserve the contiguous agricultural land and have the development sort of fit and nestled in the landscape in that area. This development would also feature a central green space and community building. So this, the last site included in the plan is the Headley Farm Estate. The township is contemplating an inclusionary development over the 155-acre site with a 26% affordable housing set aside. There was a prior subdivision approval before the housing market downturn, let's call it, in around 2008, for which they were approved 21 large lot homes. They ended up building the infrastructure for that development, which consists of some roads, I believe some sewer pipes, that sort of thing, some utilities in the ground.
Yeah, the fire protection tanks are in the ground. There's a water main that extends into it coming up from Annandale Village, and it's adjacent to a sewer lift station on Dewey Avenue.
There's a few million dollars of investment already in the ground. And, again, there was a prior development on the site. It's just north of the Annandale Village Historic District. It's just north of the Annandale Train Station. And the development being contemplated here is 400 units over the 155-acre site. So that yields, over the gross acreage, 22.6 units per acre, or if you consider only the developable portion of the site, it would yield 4.7 units per acre. And what's being contemplated here because of...
You just said 26 units per acre, and then you said 4 units per acre?
I said 26% set aside. Two point six units per acre from a gross perspective, from shrinking it down to the developable 85 acres, you would get a yield of about 4.7 units per acre. And because of the number of units, what's being contemplated is a variety of housing types, so single family, two family, multifamily, and some townhouses. At this point in time, the regulations are still being refined given the magnitude and just the township really wanting to get this right.
So now, before,
approximately how much affordable housing?
I had mentioned a set aside of 26%. So there would be, of that 400, included in that 400, 104 units of affordable housing, which is massive and the most the township is getting in one shot. And it really goes a long way.
Before we proceed to the next slides, I would just point out that these are sites for which the site owner approached the township and requested to be included in the plans and to potentially develop these properties with inclusionary development, correct?
Part of the regulations dictate that you must include consider all developments that arise and that are brought before a municipality. So that's a discussion of these.
And, Tom, just to cut off what might be a rumor generator, there will be no vehicular access into the village of Annandale. There may be pedestrian access, so the station would be walkable to take a train into Somerville or someplace?
It's barely walkable. I mean, I live very close to there, and